You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D., joined this week by Nicole Hale and Chris McFeely. Chris Triplett, launched into outer space.
He's still upset over Duke.
That's got to be it. He just could not believe that Duke was not in the Final Four.
But guess who is? Well, who's in the final?
Yes, who's in the final? We know that.
Go Wildcats.
Yes, go Big Blue, Kentucky.
Oh, wait, and, you guys aren't talking about G.I. Joe? What's this, some kind of sports?
Sports yet again. We're very sorry. This is the last week. Next week, maybe we'll just mention.
Until next year.
Who wins, and then next year.
Well, we already know who's going to win.
I think so.
We'll just gloat over.
Anyway, Chris is enthralled. So it is Fanboy versus April of Fools.
None of that nonsense from us here.
Okay, so maybe just one little bit that I did before the show. But some people may have gotten Rickrolled if they tried to click the first link. But anyway.
What the hell is this, 2010?
I know.
That's not even trying.
No, basically, it was not. So, but hey, it's April. It's a new
Happy
month.
Happy April.
Guess what starts this month? Avengers vs. X-Men.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So we're very excited about that. We're going to be talking about that Zero issue at the end of the show. I did not read the Point One, Avengers Point One. I heard it tied in.
I have no idea. I forgot to order it for my store. I had to order some more. Have it next week.
No, it's not my fault.
It's not my fault. It's not my fault. The order forms are stupid now. The order forms don't have the point one written at the end. The digital order form just says Avengers vs. X-Men 24, and then the next line on Avengers vs. X-Men 24 variant edition, and Avengers number 24 blank cover edition, and then on the line below that where it's supposed to be 24.1, it just says Avengers 24, and you mentally skim over it because you're already skipping over all the useless variants you don't want to order. Fix your forms, Diamond. Look what you do. Look what happens.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Although I have heard enough complaining about Diamond that I'll probably go with that. Yeah. My shop did not have it, at least not when I went in, so I think I'm going to pick it up.
Maybe they made the same mistake.
It's possible. But I'm going to pick it up digital, I think, today. I meant to read it and just ran out of time, so...
I'm pretty sure my shop had it. I just didn't.
I know it's got Vision on the front, so yeah. Sounds likely.
I'll have it Ed next week anyway, so we'll find out when. I'll read it before I read anything else from this week.
I haven't seen any good comic related April Fool's stuff. Have you guys? We don't really have news this week.
No, the only piece of news that I even thought was worth talking about might be in April Fool's because it was on Newsarama's Facebook. They showed. The Spider-Man promotional image. You know, you remember the one that was the red background and the two Spider-Man logos merged and the two silhouetted Spideys jumping at each other and everybody's thinking, you know, is it a crossover? Is it not? We still don't know what the story is, but Newsarama showed a picture of it with one of the Spider-Man filled in as mainstream universe 616 Spidey. But I think since nowhere else seems to be reporting on it, it must be an April Fool.
That sounds likely. Sounds like an odd day for that to come out.
I mean, Emerald City Con is this weekend, though, but there doesn't seem to have been any.
I didn't hear anything because I've been actually watching the news sources.
Wow.
That's something that goes down tonight.
Comic stuff. What's up with that? I've seen plenty of other cool stuff like Google Gmail Tap. The Google Maps for Nintendo which was hilarious. But yeah, so good
stuff. I just think it's funny that all these comic conventions, quote unquote comic conventions, and none of them talk about comics. They talk like about movies now.
Well, that's
just the nature of the thing, right?
Yeah, that's where they're making the big money. You know, they're making the movies and making big money off of those so that they can make
funny books
that lose money.
Funny books,
You know,
are you my grandparents for the 1970s?
No.
Your funny books.
Oh, come on.
Some funny books there, son.
I've heard writers say that on Twitter and stuff. I think it's kind of funny.
But only, like, ironically.
Yeah. Dude.
Most of my books aren't too funny.
it just depends. I don't know. I was thinking, of course, maybe we may talk some cartoons next week, because a few things came out that the rest of our cast did not get to see. Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes came out today, Spider-Man, Ultimate Spider-Man,
Spider-Man was awesome.
So apparently Spider-Man was good.
I am not sure what to think about it. Obviously, I have to watch it, but
you haven't watched it yet, so don't judge it, because it's...
No, that's true, that's true. I'm just judging it based on the promotional material and the rather toyetic approach.
Yeah, I gotta get promotional stuff to do.
I will say about the Avengers, the episode that was on today was written by Chris Yost.
That's good. Yeah. He works on the show, all right. So.
Yeah, so I thought that was cool. There's some good dialogue in that. There's a little in-joke in that. But anyway...
Hopefully it'll be up before the end of the night. I mean, that's the real news on the internet this weekend, is the loss of FileServe and the continued attempt at cracking down on file-sharing services that everyone is hoping is a sick April Fool's joke gone wrong.
Heeding our ability to steal television shows and movies.
How dare they?
You know?
You can thank me. I'm the one that actually pays for the television and watches it.
You know, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, for like Chris... It's like he has no... He's not taking money from our American television programs. He can't get them at all.
I would if I could.
I mean, he would if he could. You know.
I would steal it right out from under them. They deserve nothing with their 8 minutes of breaks to every half hour. Come over here. We don't have breaks on at least two of our channels.
Yeah, no breaks.
Yeah, but you guys also pay for that.
Yeah.
In some way or another.
This is true.
Right.
But... shut up.
I just wig an argument with Nick Feely.
Here's a picture of a rabbit with a pancake on its head. I win. Anyway. So we're just going to be talking comics, apparently, reviews this week, other than those things, because that's all we got. No.
Just doing a quick skim, but nothing's jumping out at me. Yeah. You know why?
So sad. So sad. Good lineup this week, though. We're going to be reviewing Dark Tower, FF, Ghost Rider. So
we've got some stuff that we haven't reviewed for a long time.
Yeah. It could be fun. I'm crying tears of sadness at Ghost Rider being over, especially the way that it ended, which I'll talk about. And I'm surprised at FF, so there's all kinds of good stuff. Anyway, so let's get to it. Let's do it, I guess.
All right.
If we shall. If we must.
I guess.
All
we
right.
We have to.
Woo!
So we go right Woo-hoo! To it. Get into it. So we do it. I'm never going to give
it.
You up. Never going to let you... Oh, no, sorry. All right, Nicole. Go for it.
All right. Well, I'm going to review something I haven't reviewed for probably about a year now. It is my favorite comic. I don't know. Maybe it's my second favorite next to Turtles, but it's the Gunslinger, the Dark Tower series, Stephen King, you know. It's the Way Station story. This is number 4. So basically, Roland has met up with his companion, Jake. He's a young teenager.
Hang on. Just before you get totally deep into the story, now, just since it's been so long since we talked Dark Tower, I know this is based on Stephen King. I know Marvel did these things sort of crazy out of order. Now, this one is an adaptation of a pre-existing Stephen King story.
This is book one.
So now, 6 years after they got started, this is them finally getting around to the first novel.
Yeah, the first novel.
Okay.
They started off with the fifth novel, which is kind of like a prequel. Yes. Now they're going back to and now they're going back to the first novel. And so this
and
is like
in between they did original stories, right?
They did a short story.
But they were original.
But
were
it's all on the same story. They're just the comics are putting it in chronological order.
Okay,
so.
I wasn't sure if the comics invented some new stories to fill that gap, or if
they all came from
the novels.
This
all from
is
the novels.
All.
Okay.
This is all, and this is why I like this, because it's like so true to the original stories. They're just putting more dialogue into it and beautiful artwork. And so it's just like, if you like the Dark Tower stories, you're going to love this. I mean, it's basically a perfect companion for it. So, but with this story, this is actually the second story that is pretty much in the first novel.
Because the first one was the series before this one called?
A Battle of Tull.
Battle of Tull, that's what I thought. And that was that's like chronologically the first novel.
That is the very
Stephen
first.
King. Okay, right.
Yep. So that's the first
story.
So
there's your history lesson. Okay. Just wanted to make sure
so
I had that right in my
story.
Head.
Yeah, so now, because I haven't talked about it for a while, Roland, our main guy, my absolute most favorite fantasy man ever. Too much information?
Wait, fantasy in terms of character from fantasy?
Character!
Or is fantasy man as man that you fantasize about? Or both?
We'll move on.
Okay.
Draw a discreet veil over that.
So... He's actually has met up with Jake at the way station, where they also ran into the Man in Black. That's the whole thing. Roland is trying to catch up with the Man in Black, but he's a little too quick. You know, that happens when you have magic. You know, you can play games with people and stuff. So they're on the road to try to find him. Now, this particular issue has a very Lord of the Rings feel to it, because you have these great big panels of just high mountains, snow-capped mountains and a desert, and you just see this small little group trying to venture off and try to survive the harsh conditions of the land. And ironically, Jake has actually mentioned Lord of the Rings. He's like, "Let's hit the mountains, Aragorn." And he's like, "What?" Of course, Roland doesn't get it, you know? He's like, "What is going on?" So Jake has fun playing with him with his earth kind of little innuendos and stuff, so
so there is
just a whole excuse.
I think I need more information here. Jake is from Earth.
Yeah, Jake is from our time, our world.
Okay.
Roland is in a world similar to ours. It's just in a different time.
Okay.
So it's kind of and he's more of a gunslinger. He's like a knight, but more of a cowboy. So
like a knight cowboy.
But in this. Yeah, so in
like
this...
Like a midnight cowboy?
Like a midnight cowboy.
There you go.
Like
so
a rhinestone.
Like a rhinestone cowboy.
It is Fanboy versus the Musical.
Oh, that needs to be planned. Airing after Sherwood. Tuesday, at 7 Central.
Well, Roland teaches Jake about the land, how to, you know, listen for things, look for things. So he's training to be a tracker. And Jake's getting nervous because they're running out of water. He's like, okay, well, you just got to concentrate and listen to the land. So they do find some water nearby. But while they're at the watering hole, they do see the Man in Black. And he's watching over him, just playing his little tricks, teasing him like, hello, here I am.
Okay, but, so what is the significance of this Man in Black character? I'm basically asking you to tell me what the Dark Tower is about, because I don't know what I really
should have. Yeah, this is making no sense at all.
Thing.
So.
Okay, the thing that it's hard to put together, because it's pretty much any kind of book that you could pretty much put into one story. So you've got like a Western, you've got sci-fi, you've got fantasy, you've got romance, you've got horror, you got pretty much everything. Basically, it's about the journey of Roland finding the Dark Tower. Ever since he was a boy, he's been hearing about this Dark Tower. It's his journey. But the Man in Black is what stands between him. The Man in Black is what is the guy who is not letting him complete his journey. And so he's after him because, well, Man in Black's slept with his mom. He's the one that killed his first love. He's the one that, you know, pretty much has teased him his whole life. I guess you call it
Grant.
Tease.
Okay.
Made his life miserable. So he's after him. And he did meet up with Roland face to face, and he gave him his future with tarot cards. And he was saying, as long as you have the boy by your side, I have you in my pocket. And that comes very close, because these are the words that Roland keeps on thinking in his head. Like, he knows something bad's going to have to happen to Jake to get to the man in black. And we'll get to there. So during this time that he's training Jake, he decides to hypnotize him to see what he knows, what is his world like. So you go into this world of Jake's memories, and they're not good. They're not good. You know, he had a very lonely life in New York City, even though he was well off. And Jake hated it there. He likes being with Roland. He's pretty much adopted Roland as his son. So this is where it gets really interesting in the comic book. They decided to, take their sleep. Well, Roland's having nightmares about the past, about the man in black, you know, especially killing his first love, which is like the biggest tragedy of his life. And then when he wakes up, he notices Jake is gone, and he gets really nervous because he's getting attached to this boy. And so he has to go out into the wilderness to try to find him. And that's where we come across this lady on fire, and she uses Jake to tempt Roland pretty much to get what she wants. And if you're a succubus, you want one thing.
So, All right.
I'll take a bow. You know it. So basically, that's how it pretty much ends. You see Roland being tempted by this woman, and he's trying every which way to not be tempted by her, but it's not really working.
You're out in the wilderness. It's been a while. I mean, even though she's got a mouthful of razor sharp teeth,
he uses his own little
another
magic.
Parts filled with teeth.
Filled with teeth. She had a vagina like a bandsaw.
What a wonderful phrase.
He tries to use his own little magic. So he sees her real self for a while, but it doesn't last long, and that's where it ends. Because you see him wanting to get away from her, but it's not working. And you just kind of see her going right for him, and you're just like, oh, I see where this is going. So basically, if you like the Lord of the Rings kind of storytelling, this is definitely an issue for you. Like I said, it's got the nice, beautiful pictures. It has him teaching the young kid how to survive. And then here comes the lady. Yep. It's always the woman's fault, right? always getting in trouble. Like I said before, if you are a fan of The Dark Tower, you've got to read this because it's so true to the books. And the art is great. And
Who is the creative team on this one? I know Peter David used to write these. Does he still write them?
He does. He does the script.
That's all right. That's a good long time he's been doing that thing.
It's the same. The only one that has changed is, I think, the editor. But everyone for the 6 years has been on here. Robin Firth does the plot and consultation. Peter David does the script. The artist is Lawrence Campbell. And Richard Eisenhoe does the art, the coloring. So. Yeah, I think that's why I like the series, because for 6 years it's been the same.
Yeah, that's a remarkably consistent thing.
So it's really consistent from book to book, and so it's, you don't have that shock like, oh, you know, so what's going on here? And they have like these little stories in the back that give you more details on what happened in the book as well, and then they have like little short stories, and it's just really well produced. Like I said, it's probably my favorite. If not, it's my second favorite. So I just love it. It's just filled with so many good stories. So highly recommend it.
I mean, lots of vaginas have teeth.
They didn't show that, but there is a lot of gore because when Roland was dreaming, he did see Jake get killed, and it was not in a pleasant way.
No wonder you enjoy it then.
Yeah, really. Sorry, your track record.
Like I said, There's some good, you know, romantic stories. It's a great adventure. I mean, you just want him to find this man in black and just tear him a new one.
Romance, intrigue, people being drawn and quartered.
Yeah. Really...
So how much longer do you think the comic will run on for then? How many books are there in the series?
There's actually a new one coming out next month, or this month.
Oh, so it's not actually over yet. So this is the one piece of modern literature.
It did end, but Stephen King decided he had a couple more stories to put out, so he got a new one. So everyone's like, what? I mean, if you read to the end of the book, one of the best endings ever in a story, and you're just like, how is he going to continue this? Everyone that's a Dark Tower fan is like, what's going on? I could actually see this going on. I mean, they're fairly big books. There were seven in the original series, and...
Right.
I know for audio CDs, there's 120 of them. So for the complete series, the last book is about 900 pages, I think, alone.
The so first how book, many of the books have been adapted into comic already, out of order?
The first one that was in comic book form was book number 5.
Yeah,
and. Yeah. Now we're back to book number one. So,
right, so
it's 6 years.
Just five and one? Or?
And we just started one.
They've only done 5 and now one? It took them 6 years to do 5?
Uh-huh. But book one is the shortest out of all of them. So.
I know they just finished up the Stand adaptation recently. You know, they finished it. It's over now. So. Well,
yeah, that was a while. So, yeah.
That was about 6 years. I remember that. No danger of... Stephen King's running out of the Stephen King fans running out of comics to read in the near future.
Yeah, according to his fan site, the comic book is doing well. Oh, so yeah. Especially in trade.
Oh yeah, I would assume bookstores are really for that selling. Yeah,
this stuff is excellent in trade. So, all right, that's me.
Sweet,
JD.
All right, all right. Well, we all know that I have been a pretty big fan of the new Ghost Rider. I'm so glad Chris Triplett is not here to spout his blasphemous talk of...
You know what I love? I love Dan Ketch.
God damn it! Dan Ketch is fine. It's just that I get kind of... It's just like, I don't know. There's that just dedicated group of people that are just like, oh, bring him back. And I don't think that he was any particularly better or worse than any other... Ghost Rider.
Apart from in his whole being popular and succeeding in sales thing, which no other Ghost Rider...
I think that had more to do with the time than it did with him.
Well, yeah, I'll give you that.
I don't think that's an artifact. I think it's just an artifact that the 90s, we were all like, yeah, hardcore!
Spikes and leather and fire!
Did you see that? His head's on fire, man!
This comic comes in a bag!
Oh, it's hardcore! Hardcore! You know.
Trading cards packed in!
Oh, yeah. So I don't think that was really an artifact of Dan Ketch as much as it was just the time. So so this is it. This is the end. Now, of course, there's been the Circle of Five, or Circle of Four, I'm sorry. I actually haven't finished it yet. Bad JD. But I ended up missing an issue in there, and that always screws me up when I'm reading a series like that.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway.
Weird at the end, at the very end, like an issue shipped late, and then two parts of it came out in the same week, you know, so it got, fell out of step with itself.
Yeah, I think it, yeah, and so I've got to, like I said, I've got to go back, and I think I've got to get two of those digital. So I'm going to finish up, but it does tie in fairly directly to what's going on in here. so Alejandra is basically on a mission against Mephisto at this point. I think somehow she had sided with Blackheart at the end of the Circle of Four storyline, and Mephisto also gave Johnny a magic bullet. Didn't make his shotgun magic, but gave him a magic bullet to kill Ghost Rider with. But Alejandra's on the hunt for Mephisto now. She's decided that Mephisto's the one that's going to be able to get the souls back so that she can... Because her whole thing has been restoring the souls in South America of the people that she was, you know, raised with, that were all raised to sort of destroy the world. And she wants to restore their sin, to restore their souls, essentially. And that's been her thing. So the first thing that she does is tracks down the zombie that was used to choose her and cuts his head off. which he's hanging out. He's hanging out in a strip club for some reason. But there's a cutaway in here, and there's a discussion about what this is all about at the end of it. But as far as what this whole arc has been about, but there's just a brief cutaway of her and some boy running off from the temple, and I guess having sex by a waterfall. Two pages
of
that.
What is it with boys in our comics this week? Jeez.
Yeah. So anyway, she gets the zombie basically to tell her how to find Adam, because of course Adam is still alive. Adam is the one, you know, this is the Adam and Eve. And he's still alive and sort of hiding out and wandering around. And
of course,
her plan is basically to get Adam to supercharge her like he did before, and then she's going to go kick Mephisto's ass. A solid plan, I think, you know.
Indeed.
That sounds reasonable. And so she does. She finds Adam and threatens him and gets him to supercharge her. And, which he does, of course, willingly. which leaves Johnny basically little choice but to go after her and to stop her. Because, of course, if he kills Mephisto, then Mephisto's realm collapses and basically all of reality sort of goes with it. So that would be bad. We don't really.
I guess.
That. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not ideal anyway.
It lives there.
But there's a great part in here where Doctor Strange, he's talking to Doctor Strange and, you know, gets Strange to basically help him with the portal. And Strange's like, all right, cool, but, you know, we're going to call the Avengers in and we're all going to help out. And John, he's like, nah, and shoots him in the foot. He's like, nah, I got to do this on my own. Have fun. And rides off into hell. So, yeah, Alejandra's pretty badass in this. She's got, she's basically got extra armor, extra spikes, extra flamey chains, a gilded sort of sickle sword that she's been using, but basically a more ornate-looking version of it. There's a great one page of it in here. And, yeah, she just beats the shit out of the demons guarding the gates of hell, kills them all, and then summons her bike and breaks down the door, of which Johnny follows not far behind. And the demons are like, sweet! Real human! All right! We don't get to torture those very often. He's like, ah! Contract from Mephisto. Can't touch me. And they're like, damn it. Can't touch me.
So, that's our challenge, is to have a song for each of our
reviews. A song for each of our reviews. So we're 2 for 2 for us so far. We're doing well. So Johnny rides into hell, and basically an enormous Mephisto is fighting an enormous Alejandra Ghost Rider over a pit of lava. Yeah. Yeah, basically that's it. So, now, Mephisto and Alejandra, of course, mostly Mephisto, having a bit of banter back and forth. Mephisto's talking about how, you know, she's trying to save the souls of those that, you know, that she had wronged. And he even makes a great line in here where he's talking about how he can only torture those... none of you seem to realize that I can't actually torture you unless you're already torturing yourselves. Great line. Which seems to be that the inner struggle is what, you know, he feeds off of, the inner doubt and remorse or whatever. But he's pretty much beating the shit out of Alejandra in this process. And just as he's about to basically deliver the killing blow, she parries his spear, jumps up, and rips his heart out of his chest.
Well,
that sounds like a good time.
Yeah, which of course doesn't kill him, but if she destroys his heart, then he would die. So she convinces him to give him the box, and the box of souls, essentially, in exchange for the heart. And he gives her the box. And she's got the heart, and by the way that the dialogue is going, you get the feeling that she's going to go ahead and off him anyway. And about that time, a shot rings through Ghost Rider's head. And it's Johnny.
Ooh.
Yep. Totally sniped her. And so she starts to fall off a cliff and transforms basically back into Alejandra. And there's a whole great deal where Johnny basically jumps his bike over, oh, I'd say about a half-mile chasm to get to Alejandra.
He's got talent.
He does. He has a history of doing that, you know. You know, it's old life. But he's in the process of saving her, and she drops the box, actually. She drops the box into the fire and loses the souls. And she basically says, you know, she doesn't deserve, you know, she couldn't save them. She screwed up. She doesn't deserve to live. And that, you know, they deserve vengeance from what she did. And so she drops off, and she starts to fall into the cliff, and Johnny rides after her into the fire, and it's the lake of fire is calm for a moment, and then he emerges as the rider.
I was going to say, yeah, is this going to be about Johnny Blaze becoming the Ghost Rider again?
Yep. And
because obviously they have to tie into that massively successful new film that just came out.
Oh, yeah. Massively successful. And he's carrying...
No, wait, I mean terrible.
I mean, not successful. April Fool's. carrying the burnt carcass of Alejandra, of which Mephisto's response is, and good riddance. So Alejandra didn't die, though. Sort of.
Kinda.
She's basically a burnt, meaty... flaming head thing. Yeah. Sort of crispy. Well done. Yeah. And it looks like she's basically going to turn into sort of a Ghost Rider villain, essentially. The souls were restored, though.
That's where they're leaving it?
Yeah, the souls... So they restore the souls of the people of this South American village or whatever. But essentially, she's going to be a sort of... I don't know, I guess an antithesis to the rider that, like a sort of, there's the lines here are, you know, who punishes if the Ghost Rider is the punisher of, you know, or bringer of vengeance, you know, who punishes the Ghost Rider? And so that seems to be her future in this. So she rides off on motorcycle and he rides off on his.
She still has a motorcycle, okay.
Yeah. But it's not like a... Well, I guess it does. I guess it does have... Yeah, they both have flaming wheels. So apparently she did get infused with some hell powers, but she doesn't carry Zarathos. Let's see if they... I'm trying to remember.
And she was...
And she still got some of the... Yeah, basically she's got the Spirit of Vengeance overloaded energy, essentially. So she's got that, but... And that's what's, of course, keeping her alive and gives her powers. But she doesn't actually have a spirit. So she's an individual entity with basically very similar Ghost Rider powers. Hmm. So yeah.
I wonder if that was the plan all along or if this was something they came up with at the end.
I don't know. It sort of seems like somewhere between planning the end of Circle of Four, and I'll have to finish Circle of Four, of course, to know. It seems somewhere between the cancellation and Circle of Four, like that's what this came to. The end of this, and based on, of course, you know, Williams wrote a little postscript to this, and wrote about, you know, finishing off and her arc, and it sort of seems to indicate that this wasn't really his plan. I think they were sort of trying to go with the Alejandra thing, and I think they would have tried to keep that going if it was more popular. And of course, it just wasn't, and for a lot of reasons that we've discussed on the show before, you know, despite my enthusiasm about it. It does sort of seem like that, you know, it at least gives them the ability to keep the character around, take it in a more interesting direction. You know, Alejandra's thing all along was that she's sort of broken from the beginning, right? Because she was essentially, you know, raised, brainwashed, and created you know, to destroy the world. I mean, that's what that entire tribe, you know, that entire group of people in the temple were created to do by Adam. You know, they were a group that was selected to eventually take on the Ghost Rider, to be powered up, and to basically burn sin out of the world. And, you know, so that's really her lineage. And, you know, then when she actually became the Rider, it sort of screwed all that up, basically. But, so she doesn't really have a good, you know, lineage in that respect. So I think it's at least an interesting consolation to have her sort of start to take a villain route. Because at least gives that character a chance to at least hang around and maybe do something. You know, and I say that, and we may never see this character again. I commented on Twitter earlier that I am kind of disappointed that I think Alejandra's run as Ghost Rider will become little more than a few sentences on Wikipedia.
I saw that.
And that's really disappointing, I think, because I think this had a lot of potential. But even Williams sort of takes a little bit of the brunt of that by saying that it took him a little bit of time to kind of get up to speed with her. And I think by the time he was up to speed, they had already made the decision to cut her. So, you know, and that sucks. And that's just the way of the business, you know. It's not something.
So being a fan, would you say this was a good ending? Is this how you pictured the ending was going to be? Or
no.
How would you changed it?
I wouldn't say it's a bad ending. I mean, it's like I said, it at least gives Alejandra something more interesting. You know, I think it would have been really crap for Alejandra to just die completely. Although that would have been acceptable as well. Because at least in the way that the story was going, that would have been a little sort of senseless, I guess. It would have been like, oh, you're just going to kill her off, you know, because you're done with her. And I think it would have also been a little bit disappointing for her to just become depowered and say, okay, well, I'm just going to kind of go live my life. You know, because that seems a little, you know, for someone that's been a hero in a comic, that seems a little, I mean, that's almost like worse than death. You know, because then it's just like, now you have nothing. But, you know...
No, that is exactly what happened to Johnny Blaze at the end of his series, the way back when.
Yeah, it is, but that all... And then they ended up bringing him... You know, of course, we know how that has worked out now, but yeah, exactly, that is what they did with him. But I think that this is a little more interesting. It gives the character somewhere to go, something to do, the potential to show up again. You know, maybe she'll... I mean, and also to be not a hero, because that's kind of cliche, too, to be like, oh, okay, you were a hero, you know, in this capacity once, now you're going to be a hero in this capacity. But to have her sort of be a heroic character and then have a turn and then sort of become a villain, I think that's kind of an interesting arc. So I'm not unhappy with it. I think it's more of just coming to terms, you know, with the ending and then being stuck with Johnny again.
So, one has to hope Marvel's going to let Ghost Rider have a rest now at this point.
I can't imagine that they won't. I mean, the film did badly, or at least is doing badly. The books have not done well. The character isn't really relevant. It's really hard to find a niche for that character. You know, Marvel just doesn't... I mean, Marvel doesn't
have...
That
was a character who had there was an idea behind the character in the 70s, which was the whole motorcycle culture and occultism, which were big elements of pop culture at the time of his creation. And then in the 90s, it was spikes and death and skulls and fire and leather. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, Ghost Rider, we used to make comics of him. We should keep doing that.
Well, and I think I'm sorry, go ahead, Nicole.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask you, well, would you think this character would be good on the big screen? You know, replace Nicolas Cage with a female?
I don't think anything would be better than Nicolas Cage. I don't know if it would be better to have Alejandra in the film than Johnny, if that's the question that you're asking. I think that's a hard sell in any film, and I think, you know, and maybe that's a discussion about film that we can have. I think it's a hard sell in any film to replace the most iconic version of a character when you're going to do film. Not impossible to do, and not always, you know, I'm not saying that that's a bad idea. But it's just, I think
that Danny Ketch, and I'm not trying to, I'm being funny here, but I think he probably is the most iconic Ghost Rider, and really the only reason Johnny Blaze is back in the role now is because they brought Johnny back when the first film came out.
Yeah.
Danny had been the Ghost Rider all the way up to that point, and Danny only became the Ghost Rider again in, there was a miniseries actually, it's called The Hammer Lane, which was about turning Danny into Ghost Rider again. Then he dropped off the face of the earth. Then they did. There was a Garth Ennis Korean miniseries around the time of the film, which Danny, actually, in between series, they'd established Danny had been dragged. The devil had come calling and had taken Danny to hell, and the miniseries was about him escaping from hell.
Yeah, I actually like Danny's original.
Well, yeah, I mean, he has the most gloriously, beautifully simplistic story.
Yeah.
It's Faust, like, you know, that's all it is.
But you know, and of course, they decided to go with Johnny rather than Danny.
Oh, sorry, I meant to say Johnny has the
Johnny has the Faust.
Johnny has the Faust, and that's just the most gloriously simple thing to translate to film ever. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Danny's origin, and the problem with doing Danny's story and origin is that it takes a little bit of explanation. I mean, you're leaving. There's nothing left hanging out there when you do Johnny's origin. It's like, okay, dad's dying, make a deal with the devil, that's easy. When you're doing Dan, it's like, okay, well, okay, cool, he found that medallion, but where did the medallion
magic
come from? You know, where did
There's
that come
an origin
from?
Origin to the power beyond his actual origin, you know. You're not left wondering where did the radioactive spider come from with Spider-Man's origin. You're not left wondering where did the cosmic rays come from and the Fantastic Four's origin, et cetera, et cetera. Where did the gamma bomb come from? But with Danny Ketch, if you do that origin, you are left to wonder, where did the medallion come from? And then you got to get into a whole complicated backstory. It's probably possible to simplify the origin down, but...
Well, and that's exactly what happened to Johnny, though, if you think about it. When you talk about the stuff that, you know, the fans really ignore about Danny is that all the stuff that happened, you know, later when they started to try to explain that it was, like, part of his lineage and all of the other nonsense. So, you know, and that's exactly what happens because you had that weird bit hanging out there. It sort of mess with it, but I don't know. I mean, I like Alejandra. Hers is a little more complicated too because it really has to be tied into like this larger event.
I mean, I would say if you ever tried to adapt her, probably I think the best you could hope for was really just be that she would get Johnny's origin story, and otherwise it would just be her, you know.
Yeah, or even get Danny's, you know,
Danny's. But they would strip away the whole weird complex Adam born into sin thing.
I think you could do it, but you'd have to really alter it. Like you'd really have to alter it down. I mean, I think but anything is possible in film. It just matters of can you write it in an interesting way and put it forward. Would people go see it? Probably not. But I think again that's more of an artifact of Ghost Rider than it is anything else.
I'll agree with that.
So I think, but it's just the only way that Ghost Rider I think would really work is if Marvel wanted to do something like DC is doing and really do some sort of like interconnected team mystic
Midnight Suns
book, you know, something that, like they've got Justice League Dark and, you know, they've got some of those tie-ins and stuff. If Marvel wanted to really try that and do that, then that would be the way, that would be a place where like Ghost Rider would fit in, you know. I don't see them doing that.
Yeah, he'll just wind up on the Avengers in a couple of years.
Yeah, you know. Dark Avengers. Mystic Avengers. you know, I mean, they've got some of the characters for that, like Doc Strange and whatever, but it's just, I don't see Marvel doing it. And I don't see them really trying to make a place for it. I mean, right now Marvel's trying to parse down and get down to good books that sell. And you know, that... It's just, if it's not going to work, it's not going to work. So I can cry about it, and some people can cry about it. I totally agree. I am, you know, and fully admit, I'm probably in the minority about Alejandra and her run.
Well, given the sales, that would
be exactly. I don't make any kind of like, you know, Marvel's evil and they made the wrong choice or whatever. I think it's a character that could have been viable, but it's just not for this time and for this, you know, this economy really. You know, it's just not a book that had the time to really find a following and get tied in the way to make it interesting.
Do you think that like eventually a couple of years from now they'll like have a reboot of her story or?
No, I think it's a failed. I think ultimately Marvel will consider it a failed experiment. I think that's
never stopped Marvel before. When you look at all the weird street level type heroes like Moon Knight or Black Panther, that they didn't have insisted recently on trying to continuously relaunch. Although Black Panther and Moon Knight and do seem to finally be put to bed now.
Well, I'm saying, do I think they'll do Ghost Rider again? Absolutely. I think they will keep hammering away. Every few years, they'll hammer away at Ghost Rider. Do I think they'll do it with Alejandra, or they'll try to reboot Alejandra in some way? No. I think this will be it for Alejandra. Like I said, her only hope at this point is that some writer in the future wants to use her for something, and brings her forward. And it will probably end up being Williams in his later writing if he hangs around. He'll probably be the only person that cares anything about this character. Someday if insanity happens and I write for Marvel, then I'll pull Alejandra out. but that will never happen. So
you assume you'll remember her by that stage.
I'm getting an Alejandra tattoo. Okay.
Nice.
No, I'm not. That's April Fool's.
I had a feeling you were being serious.
No, I'm not doing that. That would be cool though. So anyway, there you go, Ghost Rider. Pick it up. 9 issues. I'm sure that'll be in some sort of...
That was it? It wasn't even a year, huh?
No, it didn't make it very long. And, of course, 4 of those issues were a part of Fear Itself. So, I think it suffered part of that, too.
Oh,
I think
there was that event. I forgot.
Yeah, I think it suffered for that a little bit initially. Because it didn't even really tie in at all.
If it had been another crossover, maybe, but just like with Fear Itself specifically, and I think it's really obvious from the way tie-ins are being treated with AVX, like Fear Itself saw a big slump when it came to tie-in sales.
Yeah.
Like the mini itself was still like probably Marvel's highest selling thing, but tie-ins really, like Fear Itself was whenever everybody stood up and went, no more. Not so much a case of going, no more! As in... No more.
Make the hurting stop.
And you just look at AVX now, and there's one, and then everything else in pre-existing comics.
Yeah, just tying into stuff. Yeah, so good call on that. Anyway, there you go, Ghost Rider. Pour one out for Alejandra. So, on to you, sir, Chris McFeely.
Yes. Okay. I wasn't sure what to talk about this week, and I didn't think I would. Well, I'm going to talk about FF, but I didn't think I would talk about FF when I picked it up to read because. It's just the epilogue chapter to Jonathan Hickman's 3-year storyline. And
I'm gonna stop you right there, and I'm gonna go out and say that. Honestly, 2 weeks ago, I thought to myself, I ought to just take FF off my poll because I'm just it's all gonna be. I mean, what's it gonna say? Everything's been said. Save myself a comic, and sure enough, I go and get my comics this week, and FF's in there. I was like, I'll give it a week. Just going to say that right now. That was my thought. I'm going to let you go on.
Advance warning, we are going to have to blow the ending on this one.
Oh, God, yes. There's no way not to.
That's good, because I didn't pick it up. I want to know what the hell you guys are talking about.
Oh, my God.
Well, the main body of this issue takes place between the end of the story from Fantastic Four 600 and 4 and the quick epilogue, the 2-page epilogue that was in that issue as well. And I was quite, first of all, like, that was an immediate mark in the comic's favor when I opened it up and saw that's where it was taking place, because I was really wondering what the deal was, And it's basically just everybody tries to put the pieces back together after the adult Franklin uses his superpowers to destroy the Celestials. They rebuild the Baxter Building. Franklin and Galactus talk metaphorically off in space. I mean, for instance, at the end of Fantastic Four 604, you really weren't sure what had become of the adult Franklin and Valeria from the future. It turns out in this issue, they're going to be hanging around.
Yeah, they're just hanging out.
Just chilling.
Little vacation in the past,
Yeah. Well, there's no future for them to go back to. I mean, they came back in time from the heat death of the universe.
Yeah.
So, where do you go?
Yeah.
Johnny and Johnny decides to move in with Spider-Man. We knew that was coming up in future issues. That's going to be fantastic. Looking forward to that. That's the next issue of FF. I mean, it's really unclear what FF is. Well, hang on. We'll talk. We'll get to
that. Yeah, we're going to do that.
Because as much as this is epilogue, it is also setting up the new elements of the Future Foundation. You know, they clean up Manhattan. You see Valeria pulling a little red wagon along, piled high with scrap, throwing them into the negative zone, where all the rubble and wreckage is thrown into a portal to the negative zone, where their scavenging civilization just uses it to build new things. You know, everybody wins. There's this, oh, I love this scene so much, where, you know, Captain America says, well, what's next? And Mr. Fantastic says, now we get our home back. And he pushes a button, and then just like out of the sea of debris that's covering Manhattan, every little brick, every little shump of, shard of glass, lump of plastic, just comes flying out and reassembles into the Baxter Building on top.
Brilliant.
How is that again?
What?
Yeah.
Is that? Yeah, it's just like, well, yeah, why wouldn't you build that into all, if you make your house out of unstable molecules, you probably could program it to do that shit. But here we are, you know, at the very end again, we get this one wonderful sentence from Reed, from Hickman's Reed, that just once again reminds me that Hickman gets Reed Richards on a level that I haven't seen a writer get him in years. After the Baxter Building has just fixed itself, Reed says, I can't think of anything in the world that feels better than building something.
Yep.
Yeah. That's my Reed Richards. This is what I'm talking about.
Love it.
So we see that it hasn't been rebuilt exactly as it was, because it's got new personalized quarters for all the members of the FF, pools for the Atlanteans, little cavey things for the Moloids. And they've all got new uniforms with different numbers, because the Fantastic Four are back now to wearing the fours on their chest, because Johnny's back. Everyone now has their own number. Franklin and Valeria are 5 and 6, so we're future Franklin and Valeria. Bentley
is negative, 13. Negative colors as well for the adult...
Yep. Sure, because, I mean, they can probably change them anyway, because we know the costumes can change, but we haven't seen them done that do that very often. This whole issue, anyway, is narrated by Valeria, who's just... which is great, because it's one of those great illustrations, again, of how Valeria is still very much a child. Now that her important role... she's been so at the heart of so much of all of the stuff that's been going on just off-panel in Fantastic Four for the last 3 years. Now she finds out, really, her role was just a little piece of the puzzle. She thought she was the top dog. She thought she was hot shit. She thought she was what it was all about. And it turns out she was just a little cog in the system that was required to get her brother into position to save the universe, you know. Bad Celestials came from another universe and killed Daddy, and future me and Franklin came back to save the day. Well, actually, it was more like future me stood around and watched Franklin do all the good deeds. So, you know, now I have to put up with this for a while. I'm awesome! Who's awesome? It's me! I'm awesome! And it's like, yeah, great. And she really doesn't like her future self, you know.
Oh,
and
that part right there is great.
I know. Something about that lady, I'm not sure of. I don't think I like her. And it's like, I'm not suspicious of future Valeria. I don't think I have any reason to be. I think this is just Valeria being huffy because future her came back in time and said, yeah, I lied to you vicariously through our granddad. And then future, you know, she looks up and she thinks in a caption box, I don't think I like her at all. But then future her, knowing what she's thinking, replies out loud, right back at you.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
There is this great scene between Franklin and Galactus out in space.
One of my favorite scenes in this whole thing.
Franklin has come back from the end of everything. You know, he's seen it, and Galactus has long feared it. And Franklin tells him, you don't have to be afraid of it anymore. You and I are going to be there together, and we'll watch something come out of it again. We'll see what there is to come next. And it's pretty friggin' awesome. I feared the return of solitude, of being alone forever. And I wonder, like, it doesn't seem like this is going to be the status quo for future Franklin. Like, they're not going to hook up now. Like, they are going to have to wait till present-day Franklin grows up. So it's not like Franklin and Galactus are going to go off and, you know, scour the universe or anything. Future Foundation have a satellite as well. That's cool.
Well, I want to one thing on here. This tagline on this is great too, especially if you know a lot of Galactus history and stuff too. It's just that last part where he calls him Galen.
Oh yeah, like, that's great.
He's like, and Galen, yes, Franklin, be thankful that you're wraith the Earth.
It's awesome.
But he calls him Galen, which of course was his name from the previous universe. Yeah, so anyway, sorry.
Where Galactus came from. So they have a satellite. They go up. That's where they're going to do some stuff up there too. They're going to have a satellite now, just part of the new setup of the future foundation. And then there's a closing little scene here before the epilogue with the FF talking to Valeria and, you know, saying, you know, your granddad told us why you had to lie and everything, and we know, we understand that it was necessary and it all turned out fine, but this can't keep going forward. This can't keep happening, you know? And she promises there won't be any more secrets ever.
She swears.
Except
the one little thing.
Yeah, so up till now, the issue has been drawn by Nick Dragata, who's been drawing FF for the last issue or two. And then for this closing epilogue, this last one is 5 pages. It switches over to art by Steve Epting, who's the regular penciler for Fantastic Four. And we go to the epilogue, takes us back in time a little bit. And this must be, I think, the third time Hickman has employed this trick, where we have popped back in time to see the dialogue in a previously silent scene.
Mm-hmm.
It happened before with Valeria and the other Reeds when they came through the bridge. Their scene was silent, then we saw it filled in later. It happened in the silent issue with Reed confronting Annihilus through the Negative Zone portal. And it happens here when we see what happened, what Valeria whispered to Dr. Doom before he went through the portal to fight the Celestials. And she told him to stay alive because there was something in there she left for him. And it's an entirely silent sequence. I gotta blow it. This is it, just full of detail.
I mean,
Dr. Doom has survived. Dr. Doom lives. Because the Celestials appeared in this universe, so he was left behind, left for dead. But Doom endures as Doom does. He goes into the broken citadel of the Reeds. He finds on one of their charred bodies a pair of Infinity Gauntlets. And you think, that's, oh crap.
Oh god, yeah, that's it. He's, oh.
And then he hears a voice go,
Doom?
And it turns out, and I had this peg just before I turned the page. I figured that it was this beautiful, just moment of cosmic symmetry where everything just went inside my head, and I was like, "Oh shit!" I realized what was about to happen, right down to the friggin' dialogue. I realized, way back at the very start of Hickman's run, in the first three-parter, Solve Everything, we found out that the Reeds had captured every Doctor Doom they had ever found across the multiverse and lobotomized them, and they were keeping them in the basement of their citadel.
Mm-hmm.
And from below the citadel emerged the shambling army of brainwashed Dooms. Doom! Doom! Doom!
Doom! Doom!
Doom!
Doom!
Be their king! And I realized it was the very last missing piece of the puzzle from everything Hickman has done from 3 years. Like 2 years ago, in one flash of the future that we had, where a couple of lines of dialogue were dropped. Like, we saw the line of Johnny saying his last lines before he disappeared to the Negative Zone to die. There might have been another line. But there was one line, and it was Doom saying, yes, here I can build. And I had spent so long thinking it was going to be about when he inevitably joined the Future Foundation, but no.
Mm-mm.
It is here that Doom can build. Every piece of the puzzle falls into place, and the Parliament of Doom is born. I shat bricks.
Parliament of Doom. Oh my god. I couldn't. I was like, oh, this
snap.
Just, I mean, and I was actually more on to the Doom things. As soon as her line, there's something there worth the cost, I was like, oh crappity. There's all those Dooms in the basement.
Oh, wow.
And then when the gauntlets were almost like a little bit of a diversion.
I am.
You know.
Shouldn't you be singing the Doom song right now?
Doom.
Doom, doom, doom. Agents, you know, Invader Zim.
Ah.
Doom, 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 doom.
Oh, God.
We had to have a song for this comic book.
We had to have a song for this one, yeah.
Well, that is definitely the Doom song, let me tell you. Yeah, it's like a it's like a silent sequence for six pages that manages like three different gasp moments all at once. That's storytelling.
Yeah.
And the question is now, you know, is this, will we see more of this? Is this what is going to happen now in Hickman's 6-7 month wind down, now that his 3-year story is over? Is this the epilogue? Because Hickman never really got to tell a Doom story. He got to tell a story in which Doom had a part. But every Fantastic Four author tells their Doom story.
Yeah.
Is this Hickman's Doom story, or is this something he's just going to leave to linger, to tease, that maybe somebody else might pick up on afterwards? I don't know. But, anybody reading both these books knows now, I think, that they can't afford to just drop one because it seems like it was over.
Yeah, I know, and that's where I'm like, damn it, I was going to save money. Damn you, Jonathan Hickman.
I really cannot pick up anything else, I swear. But this sounds really
good.
Well,
you know, there's only like one trade's worth of material from the two series left, you know, and then the whole thing will be done. I don't think we yet know how this final story is going to be collected. I've probably said it before, but it seems like it would be a really bad idea to me if they put Forever, like all five parts of Forever, in one book, and then the FF chapters in another book, because they're really not their own story. They're just about their own story, and the first three are they're the Doom story, you know, the All Hope Lies in Doom story, but then these last two are just the in-between parts of what's going on in Fantastic Four. So I still really think they ought to collect like all 9 of these issues, or 10 of these issues, however many there are. What's this? 12, 13, yeah, like 9 or 10 of these issues into one book together as the big Forever finale book.
Yeah.
And that would be the way to do it. And then there'd be an epilogue, as I say, of each, and one volume's material of each before Hickman is gone. Oh, I still don't know who's going to take it over, but he's still going to have some tremendous shoes to fill. Just when you think everything is winding down, you think this issue is just going to be like a little bit of epilogue, and it's like, yeah, we rebuilt the Baxter Building. Here's a little coda with Franklin and Galactus. Very little grumpy. But then it's like, all this new stuff gets introduced. Baxter Building's new layout. Now they have a space station. And it's like, you know, it's like we've said before with Grant Morrison. He'll do a big story, and then normally his thing is he'll flip the table over and go off. You know, whether it's the way he left the Justice League or the way he left my brain's failing. X-Men, the way he left the X-Men. Yeah. Batman was the weird exception because he basically got to his what would be the natural endpoint of the big story he was telling, which was the return of Bruce Wayne, the final volume of Batman and Robin. But he stuck around. So, you know, are these next 6 months going to be Hickman's equivalent of Batman Inc., where he sticks around to explore the new concepts he set up and tell one last unexpected story with a dangling thread of something held over from his run? Or is this just something that's going to be left to languish that the next guy is going to have to worry about?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I am excited to find out.
Yes.
This was, a, you know, normally...
It sounds like a good storyline.
Yeah.
I mean, Fantastic Four I look forward to, but this one... This one really blindsided me because I did not expect bigness from it. I expected a gentle wind down, you know. The cover is an image of Franklin bringing chess pieces to life with his powers and Valeria just looking tremendously bored at her show-off little brother, you know. And that's the tone of the whole issue. It's like, whatever, okay, you can create stars and life, but shut up.
Yeah, really. and that's what I mean. Like, the cover of this is very disarming because it's exactly what I said. Oh, okay, this is just going to be a kid. Okay.
Yeah. A little cutesy wind down thing. And then
punch to the face, and held down, and, you know, choke hold, and, you know. But really, I mean, it is one of those things, though, where it's like you can't really get the whole spectrum of it unless you really go back. Like, yeah, start at the beginning, like, get the trades, and read forward. This is one of the few times where it's like, I was close enough at the time that I went and got the trades and, you know, thanked myself for, you know, reading it from the beginning.
Yeah, the last issue of Fantastic Four and this, like, literally go back to the very start. Well, I mean, the last issue of Fantastic Four, like, actually, literally goes back to the very first page of Hickman's Fantastic Four run. you know, with the Reed and Nathaniel thing. And then this one goes back to the very first story arc in the three issues as well. You know, it is all the way back there, and it is such an amazing payoff for anybody who's been reading it all the time, and not just a payoff, but like still leaves you wanting. You wouldn't think that you could possibly want more after the last 3 years and the ending we've had, but God damn, if he doesn't find a way to make you keep wanting, is like, God, Jonathan, no, why? Don't leave!
Why are you leaving? Why are you leaving me?
Why are you doing this to me?
Oh, awesome. We should talk about Avengers vs. X-Men.
Yes, we should. Yes. Let's talk about that. That's the Avengers vs. X-Men.
Because you're going to have to explain something to me and the listeners at home that haven't been paying attention to things like Children's Crusade and thing. Like, what the hell, Wanda?
She's good now.
Well, where? What? She's been hiding under a rock or something. Where did she come from?
Was in Children's Crusade was the book nobody was reading. Actually, I don't know what the sales were on it, but as far as it being on people's radars, being publicly talked about, nobody was fucking talking about it. I barely
talked
about it.
That's the question I had too. I'm like, when did she become good? I totally missed this.
I could see big sales for the Children's Crusade collection, which I think came out this week, maybe last week, this month. I'm pretty sure it's out now. Anyway, it turned out, as had previously been suggested, that she was chilling down in Latveria, where Beast had found her previously before having his mind wiped, where Hawkeye had found her and banged her. But it turned out that was a Doombot. The Hawkeye boned a Doombot. That was fun. It turned out that she had lost her memories. And was about to be married to Dr. Doom. They fixed her in the course of the story, first of all by establishing that she did not go crazy. She didn't have the greatest hold on her sanity. She came to Dr. Doom asking him for some help in the dark arts, in channeling some really dark, black, old magic, so she could tap into like the primal wellspring of life and use her magics to find a way to bring her children back to life. The spell went wrong, and like the forces of like all these dark forces like overtook her, and that's what drove her crazy and caused Avengers Disassembled. So first of all, you know, big round of applause to Alan Heinberg for fixing that. It wasn't just her. Then they managed to give her memories back. If I recall correctly, that was the result of Wiccan's magic. She was going to give the mutants all their powers back, but of course that was not a... She proved that she could do it, first of all, by giving Richter from X-Factor his powers back, but obviously she couldn't just universally give all mutants everywhere their powers back, because, hey, not every mutant everywhere wants their powers back. You know, a lot of them are happier without it. So it was going to be a long and arduous process, and of course the X-Men and Avengers turned up to have a bit of a fight about it. And she was, Wiccan talked some sense into them, and she was allowed to go free for now with Cyclops, swearing that there would be retribution when it happened again, because he was so damn certain it would. And that's where we begin with Wanda in this story, as she's out there trying to do...
I'm glad we have you, McFeely, because...
Yeah, I know, because that would be...
Yeah, you think with a number zero issue they might try and actually fill some of that in, but...
Yeah, I was just like, oh, I don't know where this is beginning. Well, let's try it.
It's still a pretty good starting place, though, aside from that.
Yeah, I mean, so... Anyway, do you want to run us through, there's not a lot to it. I guess we could run through.
No, it's just different. It's two short stories. I'll do the Wanda one. You can do the last one, because I don't give a fuck about Hope.
I don't either, but okay.
So we see MODOK and AIM stage an attack on a Wakandan ambassador's motorcade. Escorting a doctor who has betrayed AIM. And Wanda arrives to save him, causing MODOK's weapons to misfire and just raining General Hex death down upon him.
MODOK.
MODOK!
Pretty sweet. Anyway, just saying.
Everybody love MODOK.
Just take Tyrannosaurus head on a rocket.
MODOK. Yeah. He has big spider legs these days, too, so there he is. And then Spider-Woman and Miss Marvel arrive to help join the fight, and they win. Hooray. And they're like, hey, Wanda, how you doing? Yay. Cause
what up? Long time no see. Yo.
I think they were present in the in the children's crusade, so they know she's better now, but she's just trying to improve herself, and they recommend that she comes back to the mansion with them. And what follows is one of the ice-coldest things I think I've ever
God.
Oh, son of a bitch.
If your idea of Vision is just sort of this stoic, non-emotional, you know, cardboard cutout of a person with vaguely Martian Manhunter powers, you are very wrong and will not be prepared for what is about to happen.
I mean, I think that basically the entire reason the Vision came back like 6 months ago in Avengers is so this could happen. This is why.
Oh, really?
This scene.
Back now because this so, you know, they come up to the door, but before they can knock on it, Vision phases through it. And what are you doing here, Wanda? And then, why did you come here? I have empathy for all your life struggles, and I have empathy for the manipulations that you may have endured. But why did I? And I'm reading this, and I'm like, I don't know if I like what's going on here. And the Vision's a bit harsh here. What's his beef? What's his beef? I always, you know, just have his wife here. I mean, I know they had their problems. You should be happy to see her. But what I do not have compassion or understanding for is the idea that when you were at your lowest, you chose, out of the millions of choices and variables in front of you, to overpower me and use my body as a weapon against my friends and home. And I was just like, oh, that's right. That totally happened. Oh, shit.
Ooh.
And I'm like, this is spot on. This would happen. You know, they've had their differences, but like, she was at a, you know, whether it was the result of the manipulations of something else or not, you know, that what she chose to do in her crazitude was to use the body of her ex-husband in that manner. You know, and she admits she's right, she says she's sorry, and he just says, this is not your home anymore. You do not belong here. And it's like the Avengers behind him all going, Jesus, Vision?
Should we...
Oh, damn, there is stone cold rough, you know. I mean, it ends with him doing a rather little tired pastiche of him doing the old an android can cry thing from his issue where he joined the Avengers, where he quietly went off to cry and reveal that truly he was more than a robot and all the rest of it. But, you know, just as a scene, I was like, oh, damn!
Yeah.
That was the ice coldest. I really enjoyed it. Like, I really enjoyed having my heart ripped out and stomped on.
Well,
but it was just really nice to see that character, you know, taking it a little further than what I really thought was coming. But if I had been really thinking, I would have expected, you know, if it's, you know, I can't get up on the writer for it or anything. It's Bendis wrote this first story. Jason Aaron writes the second story. But, damn in general. It was like, way! I nearly fell off the seat I was on.
The art on the previous page is great because it's just it's that series of where, you know, it's like she says you're right, and then just a series of faces, and then just like this empty space, you know, just all of this empty space as she's on just a small patch of earth, you know, clutching herself. It's like, oh man. Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to have a comic be about two hot chicks, you would get Frank Cho to draw it. That's how it works. But he's done a very good job, just on that page in particular. It's like this horrible isolation.
Oh, God. It's just like you just feel alone. Just can't imagine. Oh, heartbreaking. And then boring shit happens.
yeah, then the less interesting half happens, but probably the more important part, because it seems like the Scarlet Witch isn't going to be immediately present in Avengers vs. X-Men. Like, her role is going to come a little later.
Yeah.
It's going to be about from the outside.
Most of this dialogue, this first part, of this exchange has been in the back of several Marvel issues. But it's just an exchange between Scott and Hope, where Hope is feeling a little boxed in at this point. Because really, the Avengers kind of want to kill her, and
that's a problem.
You know, I mean, she's eventually going to host the Phoenix, and nobody likes the Phoenix. So if we just kill her, then you know that's.
And
cool.
It's like nobody can say, and it's like, and why is that exactly? Yeah, Nah.
Nah.
Nobody seems to know exactly why everybody thinks the Phoenix is coming for Hope. I don't know if this has been gone into a little more in the X-books, but the fact that Cyclops actually has to tell her in this comic that it is coming for her would not imply any deep discourse has been gone into.
Is something
in the
that Cable has
X-books.
Said, or...
Maybe it was in X-Sanction. I didn't read X-Sanction. I leafed X-Sanction. So maybe it has been established there that the Phoenix is coming for her.
I don't know.
Yeah, and they're still twisting the relation between Jean and Phoenix in this, which does always get on my tits when people forget that. The Phoenix did not come for Jean. Jean is not possessed by the Phoenix. The Phoenix impersonated Jean.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Anyway, that's just a Nikolai.
So basically, Scott is, you know, of course, Scott is the Scott that we've come to know and dickish. Anyway, you know, where it's sort of like, well, you're not a prisoner here, but we would really appreciate it if you would stay here. She's been traveling off of Utopia and doing little superhero things. So he's trying to explain to her why it's important for her to stay, and she just optic blasts him in the face. So that's fun.
That's her part. Like that. Her pyre is our copy other mutants' pyre.
Right. And she rocket packs off the
island.
If
you don't know Hope.
Yeah, right, if you don't know what Hope's thing is, she's... of course, Scott Lang's like, well, I probably could have gone better. there's a, let's see, wasn't there a part where he's talking about, what am I trying to think of here? There's a part where he's saying that, I guess that's after this, anyway, I'm sorry. So she rushes off to a bank robbery, which is being, perpetrated by... What is this group called again?
The Serpent Society.
Serpent Society. Remember them?
yes.
So she blows up the rocket pack in the process, which is kind of funny. She basically dismantles that entire group, beats the crap out of them completely, in particular because one of them is a mutant. One of the lines that I did sort of like in here was she's wrapped up by one of the serpent.
Anaconda.
Yeah, and she headbutts her, and the girl's like, headbutt? I didn't ever understand the headbutt. I mean, if you're hitting somebody else, you're hitting yourself too, right? So Hope just continues to whack her in the head until she finally knocks her out. So I guess it's not always that way. what is this guy's name again?
Puff Adder.
I guess he can expand his body or something. And she beats the crap out of him. Anyway, Scott and Emma show up just in time for her to not beat everybody into a bloody pulp. Hope goes off to, I guess, clean all the blood off of her hands. Scott is having this conversation about how they keep treating her like a kid, but she's not really a kid. You know, she's been through a lot in her life. You know, she's been running since she was, you know, for 15 years and all of these things. And Scott's sort of cold line is this, and in the end, she's going to save us all. And Emma's like, or kill us all. And he's like, well, either way, that makes her something special. And it's like, if you had any doubt that Scott is just going off the deep end, you know, like, this is the chance of saving us all or killing us all, whatever, she's awesome. Like,
I mean, that's the thing about Hope, though. She's been told all her life that she's awesome. Nobody's actually going to tell her why, you know.
There's a little bit of a drift effect with this, and too, in that sense, where coming in from the outside to AVX, where I haven't had a lot of exposure to Hope, I'm not really sure why Hope is so awesome, other than... You know, yeah, she had that fight sequence there, and okay, that was pretty cool fighting.
She could use other people's powers, that's the thing.
Okay, lots of mutants can do lots of cool stuff, but that's not what makes them cool. Like, what makes them cool is story stuff. I mean, I've been told that she's been on the run and surviving since she was 15, but I don't have a context for that, so I don't know. But,
Well, that was in Cable, to be fair. I mean, that's not just informed information like that.
No, I know, but I had to have read that, and I don't care. I'm kidding. Anyway, so I don't know. I for some reason I'm not gravitating to Hope yet. And maybe that's
now
that
the Hope half of the story is the less interesting one to me. But then I was somebody who was tremendously annoyed by Avengers Disassembled. I have always felt there was a pronounced Wanda-shaped hole in the Avengers ever since, and on a Vision-shaped hole as well. So he comes back, and she comes back, and Alan Heinberg fixes what went wrong with her. But you know, they're still. It was good because it wasn't a fix to absolve her. You know, she still has to live with all the guilt of everything she ever did, and the distrust of the one person who was the closest to her. Mm-hmm. It's some ice cold shit.
Yeah, that scene was just.
I loved it. I loved it and hated it at the same time, you know.
But of course, we end with the Phoenix in space, way off, yes. Past the galaxy, I guess.
I like that. I like that last page.
Yeah, it's a nice one.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, nice little pullback. So anyway,
you know, I read an interesting article about this. I think it was on Bleeding Cool, where they were talking about it was like, what was the expression they used? Like the Eve paradigm, or the Eve paradox, or the Eve situation, where you know it's like woman do bad, man suffer.
Yeah,
and then you know, Hope leaves the place, you know, the garden, if you will, where she has been sequestered and leaves because she do bad and fights some serpents.
Yeah,
seemed interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. The elements are there. I don't know.
More interested in the giant head. I don't know. I don't know where the giant head on spider legs fits in them.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
I gotta say, for a comic to introduce us to a whole new series, I'm kind of not impressed because I don't know what's going on. I just there's a love story going on, and then there's this other girl who's having a bad day thing going on.
I mean, in fairness, it's an issue zero, so it's not...
Yeah, that's true.
It's not really a first issue, and I don't, you know, I don't really want to treat it as a first issue for that reason. You know, I think this was really more...
I mean, this is just very much just a about catching up anybody, I mean, catching up people as to where the two key figures that are going to be part of this story are in their lives right now.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who's been reading the books up to now probably don't need this. There's really little use for it. This is really just for people who may not even know who these characters are. Yeah. I mean, the word is that AVX has more pre-orders than Justice League did. So this is on track to be, the AVX number one is on track to be like the top-selling book of the year. Beating out the first issue of Justice League. So if that means that there are new readers, the mythical entity known as the New Reader, with the body of a lion and the tail of a goat, joining up to read this, you know, something to just introduce them and show them where the two central figures in the story are is probably quite useful, because they won't know about Wanda and being crazy and disappearing for 6 years and Life Force and Doctor Doom and everything. We just get the quick fill-in from MODOK that she is the disgraced Avenger and that, you know, she wasn't right, but she's okay now. And it just, you know, it's like, here's the character, this is what she went through, and now let's go. Here we, you know. I really enjoyed this, actually. I thought this was off to a very good start, and I think it bodes very well for AVX. Mm-hmm. I mean, more so the ice burn than the Hope story, cool. You know.
And that's why I've heard that the 14.1 like ties into some of that, so that's why I want to check it out.
That's what I wish I would have checked out then too.
It is going on the top of my stack for this week. I'll read it tomorrow, and I'll see what's happening there.
So very cool. So there you go, AVX.
So no, it's good stuff.
Yeah, and that's when's the first issue of that come out? Is that
this week?
That's this week. So there we go.
Yeah.
So we will probably be talking about
one. We'll be talking about that next week
again as well.
Yeah.
So cool. Awesome. Well, there you go. No fooling. This was a good show.
No. I see what you did there.
We had fun.
So next week. So this is issue. This is episode 96. As we have discussed. We will not be here for what would be the 100th. It'd be the next week. It'd be the week after BotCon, basically.
Shit, is BotCon that close?
Yes, sir. 4 weeks from today, I will be driving back from BotCon with Brian Kilby and XV. So Yes, sir.
Who will survive?
I don't know, but I know I'm going to be eating a lot of breakfast burritos. Get ready for that. Play stink out. Anyway,
We should place bets. Do a bracket.
Who's gonna last?
Who will survive?
Yeah, we're all gonna be cooped up in John's house down there, so that's gonna be entertaining as well. So we will not have a show in 4 weeks. When we come back, we should be doing our big 100th episode that we've been planning diligently for.
Oh, at least 5 minutes.
Fools. But we'll do something.
And all this on the show live.
Yeah. But we'll hopefully do something interesting with that for our 100. Next week, Nicole will not be here, correct?
I'll be out of town.
I don't know if Triplett's going to be here or not. I'm going to assume not. Next week is Easter. I didn't know this because I'm an atheist. So we may lose.
You didn't see all the goodies out in the shops?
I know.
You see chocolate bunnies out there?
Because the color of the chocolate
Cadbury mini
matches
eggs?
The color
Come
of
on.
The wood. Eddie, is it? No? Okay. So anyway,
you're on
so,
your own.
No? Okay.
No.
The Brits don't listen to Eddie Izzard, apparently. It's just an American thing. Anyway, so we may have a condensed show. It may just be, I don't know, Chris, are you going to be here next week?
Yeah, I should be here.
So there you go. See, so it'll be just Chris and I, maybe, talking AVX. That'll be exciting. So, cool. All right. So there you go. There's the show. Check us out at fanboyversus.com. Follow us on Twitter, @fanboyvs. And if you're going to be at BotCon, I'm going to be there, so you can see me.
Ooh.
I know. You see the fat man in person. Yay.
You know what? We did give a song for our last review.
We didn't? No.
No. We failed.
Yep. Well, that meme died quickly, didn't it? So anyway. So thanks for joining us for our April Fool's not very special. We didn't really do anything for, but alas.
So. Got Rickrolled.
Some people might have. It happens. So
yeah.
Cool. Well, anyway, that's the show. Appreciate you listening. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.